Thursday, Cleveland. It is a good day to be an Ohio State Buckeyes fan. And it is about the same feeling as it has been for the last, 17, 18 weeks as it is to be a Browns fan. Is that an accurate representation? Can we sandwich those two next to each other? Can we feel good about football and bad about football? I think that's where we stand today. We're a little bit on both. Jake Volnick with you guys here on Overtime on 92.3 The Fan up until 11 p.m. There was some interesting stuff happening on the station earlier on in the day. We got to the Jeremy Fowler joining Baskin and Phelps that was solo hosted by Dan Manigan today. Jeremy Fowler, of course, initially having the report sort of the he talked to Jimmy Haslam. Jimmy Haslam said Andrew Berry, Kevin Stefanski are pretty much, he's feeling good about him. I don't know that he called him safe. I'm not going to put those words in his mouth, but he feels like he had the right people in business. He also then followed it up with an article essentially laying out everything that has gone wrong for the Browns in 2024. There was a particular set of comments, though, that he talked about that were a little bit more attention-grabbing. Because I think we all are walking into this right now, heading into this last week of the season and heading into the offseason. And up until this point, we felt relatively safe with the assumption that the Browns were okay with moving off of Deshaun Watson. He was out of the picture, not going to be involved. Sure, it's going to be a quarterback competition. And as many as times as we've heard that, I don't know how many people truly believe that that's a real thing. Right? They can say quarterback competition all they want. In everybody's mind, it's Deshaun's going to be riding the pine. He'll be off to the side. And whoever you bring in is the quarterback that you're turning to. And Deshaun is this afterthought, this $230 million afterthought that nobody wants to think about. And he comes with no question. $230 million worth of a failure of this season within a failure of the last 3 years. I mean, this season has been nothing good for Deshaun Watson and, of course, for the Browns. You're walking into the last week of the season at 3-13 thinking, what just happened? Right? Like, you knew as the weeks progressed on and on through the beginning of the year, with each passing week, it was, okay, this isn't getting any better. Deshaun's not looking any better. The Cleveland Browns are not looking much better. The defense was struggling, and the offense was stagnant, non-existent practically. When you walked into this season, though, it feels like you did everything in your power to help Deshaun. You surrounded him with everything that he possibly could have needed. Right, you tried to bolster the wide receiver room, albeit Amari Cooper didn't pan out in the way that you thought he was going to because he just looked like a guy who didn't want to be playing in Cleveland. But he tried to bolster the offensive line. You bring in Ken Dorsey. Right, you try to adapt your entire offense to fit what Deshaun Watson would be more comfortable running. Tailor it to Deshaun, and you got at least a portion of 7 games of that. It's 6 full games and a little bit of another one. To look at Deshaun and say somehow, some way, despite tailoring everything to the quarterback, this just didn't work. So when Jeremy Fowler's on with Dan earlier, and he says something along the lines of, well, you know, talking with the Browns and talking with NFL execs, it feels like a lot of them think that Deshaun's problems are strictly mental and that he does still have the physical attributes to be an NFL quarterback. He still could sling the ball even after the shoulder injury. All the physical traits were there, and it's not this foregone conclusion. That sort of changes things. You think when you get to the point of a majority of the fan base booing a guy off the field after he just suffered a season-ending injury, that was going to be the bookmark, the bookend to Deshaun Watson's time in Cleveland. You could very comfortably say, okay, there's clearly no back in here. The play on the field determined a large portion of that. But then what Jeremy Fowler says today sort of opens the can of worms. It opens it back up because I think you have to change your perspective on how it's thought if that's truly what's going to be the narrative for the Browns. Right? Is that this is a completely mental thing and it has nothing to do with Deshaun, the quarterback. It then turns into, if the Browns feel like he can still do this from a physical standpoint, right, you've invested $230 million into the guy. You're not getting any of that money back. And you still think he can do it on a physical aspect. There's nothing stopping you. Absolutely nothing stopping you from rolling that guy back out onto the field. Because if there's one thing that you think you can fix in a quarterback, it's going to be the mental aspect of things. If there's one thing that you find repairable about a guy, it's going to be the mindset. So then you're right back in the hole that you started. I just don't know where we got into the situation where the Browns, after watching this entire thing, that there's still apparently behind closed doors positive things to be said about Deshaun Watson, the football player, on the field. It's hard to sit there and fathom and play with that idea after what we watched, not just this season, but the past 3 years. I don't know how we come back to that full circle. But if you really think about it, it makes sense. It makes sense that we're here. We all tried to jump the gun and put Deshaun sort of out of the range and try to put him off to the side. The Browns really never told you that they wanted to do that. Right, and I've talked about this with you guys before. They never told you they're done with Deshaun Watson. They started him for 7 straight weeks telling you, we think he gives us the best chance to win. After watching him fail to score 20 points, fail to throw for 200 yards, somehow, some way, every single week, it was still, we're starting Deshaun Watson. We think he gives us the best chance to win. And whether or not they really believed that, that's what they were going to sell to you. The entire time, that's what they were going to sell to you. We ourselves are the ones who, after everything went down, sort of accepted the defeat of Deshaun Watson in the contract. The Browns never did that. We've been calling for them to you know, issue an apology, essentially. Not even an apology, just a, hey, I messed up, right hand in the air. And they have yet to do so. It is not the Browns that have moved past Deshaun Watson, but instead the fan base itself. The closest thing we've gotten to the Browns moving on has been, well, it seems pretty clear that it's going to be a quarterback competition next year. I mean, that alone implies the fact that Deshaun is in the running for the job, that he's not just going to be sitting off in Cabo somewhere, collecting a check and not being on this football team. If it's a QB competition for Deshaun, he's in the competition. He is one of the candidates to be the starting quarterback next year. He will get a shot. And that's not exactly breaking news, right? We know quarterback competition, it is a change in mindset for the Browns of, well, we don't want to make him uncomfortable, but a sort of, we can't just sit around and accept this forever. I'll give him that. If you at least go quarterback competition, you haven't accepted it. You've moved towards it. But that shouldn't be breaking news after 3 years of what you watched. That should have been a given. I think a lot of teams would have moved further than that outside of Cleveland if they were in the same scenario. Probably would have gotten out of that situation a lot more brash. Sort of put a hard ending to things in a way that the Browns wouldn't. The Browns just keep you guessing with the way that they handle things. And nothing is clear. Nothing is clear when the Browns talk about the quarterback situation or really any situation surrounding this football team. And now it feels like the Browns might have the feeling, maybe potentially, that the quarterback's still in the building based on what Jeremy Fowler said today. Right? That Deshaun could still be that guy. I'm not saying that they came out and directly said it, but their actions lead you to that move. Lead you to that possibility that could still be in the back of the Browns' mind. They're not completely over Deshaun Watson. They already committed to the guy through 2026, right? Their restructure that they had with him last week tells you that they were committing to the guy. at least to be here through 2026. And a lot of ways that could look, but you're okay with rostering him until then. And I think as long as you're rostering a guy that you handed a full guaranteed contract to, there's always a shot that he's in the running. And I just sit here and question how that's even possible. How, after watching what we did this season and even going back to last season, aside from a couple of games, I mean one half against the Ravens and a game against the Cardinals team that just wasn't great. Aside from that, we've watched poor play from Deshaun Watson. You've gotten a game and a half where you felt like, hey, maybe that some of that money that we forked over is actually going somewhere that we would enjoy it. I don't know how even NFL execs outside of Cleveland can look at this and say, well, yeah, he could still be an NFL quarterback. Watching this guy every single Sunday tells you the exact opposite. There was not one point in this season where I said, well, it really just looks to be mental for Deshaun. And that's not to throw away the fact that, yes, there are definitely big mental roadblocks in his game right now. I also just think a lot of the physical stuff wasn't there either. Right? Especially, I think, when you point back to last year, a lot of the physical stuff was just never there. A lot of throws low. It didn't look like he was making the right reads and making quick reads. And when he did, the ball was just never on target. He never seemed to move around with his legs in a way that he did in Houston. I know he always took sacks, but it didn't look like he had the same mobility and ability to escape that he had from the time he was in Houston. It's just wild to me now that while we sit here and look and can say Deshaun feels like a large reason that this entire season went haywire, that the Browns could also be looking at him as a potential solution to the entire problem, right? As part of the solution to the problem. 216-474-0092. Have we, fans of the Cleveland Browns, jumped the gun on the team being over Deshaun Watson, and are his problems just mental, or was there something there physically too? Again, 216-474-0092. You can get to me on X as well at Volnick Jake, VULINEC Jake, so we can get to our social media reactions powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Coming up a little bit later, 8:40, I got a Cavs thought for you guys, a star who's still somehow being undervalued. We'll do Get a Grip as we always do at 9 o'clock. Dylan Feltovich, Ohio State Buckeyes on SI, going to join us at 9:20. We'll get into the Buckeyes' win over Oregon and moving into the college football semifinals after we talk to Dylan as well. And Mackenzie Flynn will join us at 10:20. You got to pick one. Have we jumped the gun on the Browns being over Deshaun? And are the problems just mental, or is there physical stuff there too? 216-474-0092. It's Jake Volnick with you guys here till 11 on 92.3 The Fan.
Struck me talking to some coaches that have been with Stefanski, people that have been on his staff before when the change was made. They were pretty confused by that. It had nothing to do with Ken Dorsey, and I think everybody knew why they made it is because some of Dorsey's calling cards of spreading it out, some RPOs, some no-huddle stuff, calling cards of Deshaun in Houston. So you kind of have to try to maximize Deshaun Watson. I think that was the goal this year, whether it was supporting him in the quarterback room with the right pieces around him, the system to help him. At the same time, I think it was a challenge. Even talking to Joel Petonio, he was like, look, we were running Dorsey's passing game with some of Stefanski's principles, and then we had a new assistant offensive line coach that came from the Eagles. We were implementing pieces on that. It was a big collage of offense that they were trying to make work with a quarterback who had confidence issues. It was just a hard task for everybody to accomplish, and I think that showed a little bit.
That was Jordan Fowler of ESPN when he joined Baskin and Phelps earlier today. I mean, it was basically right from the beginning. When he lays it out like that, it just feels like it was doomed. You are always doomed right from the start. It's just a tough spot that it was always going to be difficult to make it work. I've talked about that with you guys several times. It just seemed like a pairing that was never one that was made in heaven there. The two pieces just never felt like they truly were going to work together, and it felt like it was puzzle piece together based on what Jeremy Fowler was saying there. I can't live with that. And then going into it, and you hear Jeremy there sort of point to the confidence issues and the mental aspect of Deshaun. Like, we know that it's been a train wreck season, It just sticks out to me when he mentions the mental aspects being the issue, and then sort of in a different point in that interview mentions the physical attributes and the NFL execs feeling like they're still good. Like, he can still play quarterback in the NFL from a physical standpoint. I just don't know that I live with that. I get a lot of the struggles for Deshaun have been mental. Right? Let's not throw that out the window. I understand that, and I live with that fact. A lot of the issues for him have been mental problems. Like, it just seems at times that he was a tick too slow in getting through his progressions, getting through his reads, trying to identify pressure. And then even just off the field, the way that he talked to the media, you could tell it was never a guy that was overly confident in himself. It was never a guy who really had any feeling of comfortability in his time in Cleveland. It felt like he was always on guard. He always had to have his guard up and sort of go to bat for himself. And for a lot of ways, probably because it felt like nobody else is going to bat for Deshaun. So, like, I can live with there being the mental issues on the field. I get that. I'm not trying to negate the fact that the problem. I also can't live with the fact that you just say all the physical attributes are there and he still looks like an NFL quarterback. No, it hasn't. It has been an absolute disastrous ride through 2024, through the first seven games, where for a large portion of that, it wasn't me thinking, man, Deshaun just doesn't have confidence to throw the football. It was complete incompetence on the offense. They could not move. I've seen guys with confidence still make throws. I've seen guys with confidence still use their legs. And at the end of the day, like, hit open wide receivers. Hit guys on the easy routes. Deshaun was doing none of that. 216-474-0092. Jake Volnick with your guys. Let's go out to the phones. Ruben's in Cleveland. Ruben, what's going on?
Hey, Jake. What's going on, buddy?
Not too much. What do you got for me, man?
I just have some quick thoughts. I just want to say that I feel like that 11-game suspension that kicked things off just totally derailed it. Just with that alone, like, that 11 games was pivotal, I feel like, in the development of the Cleveland Browns and Deshaun Watson and everything we had going on. Everyone was healthy. The momentum was there.
Yeah, but, I mean, you knew that was coming.
Lights out.
When you signed him, you knew – you didn't know it was going to be 11 games, but you knew there was a suspension coming.
Right. Yeah. They didn't know that was coming. I feel like that was pivotal. And then another thing was obviously the Nick Chubb injury. That was just devastating, and that was like a dagger in the heart right there. But that's just what I wanted to say. I just feel like that 11 games, I feel like, man, I wish we could get that back. But, yeah, I just wanted to get some quick thoughts in.
Yeah, Ruben, appreciate the call, man. Like, I can't live with the suspension being an issue for the Browns not getting going, because you always knew there was going to be a suspension. Honestly, 11 games in my mind was like almost on the lighter side. Like, I could have seen it being a full season. Probably anywhere between 8 games to a full season. So 11 was, I feel like, perfectly in the realm of possibility. It was always going to be close to a half season, if not a little bit more, a little bit less, and with the potential of going to an entire year. That was always going to be on the table, so I can't just say, that really set them back. You knew it was going to be there. You knew for Deshaun that he wasn't going to be available for a period of time in his first stint with the Browns, and you had to plan around that. The Nick Chubb injury, like, that completely derails the offense, and it makes it a lot harder. You're not able to run the ball the same way, at least when you're trying to go through a Kevin Stefanski offense and you had Nick Chubb. Yes, they wanted to move towards the passing game a little bit more after signing a quarterback for $230 million, but, like, if the passing game wasn't working, it was, hey, let's make sure we're establishing the run. And that kind of got ripped away from them earlier on last year in week two, where then it also sort of set off the rails. I can get that. It's just, at some point when I'm paying a guy $230 million, I can't live with the fact that it's, the injuries derailed the season. They didn't have a run game. Like, yeah, it makes it a lot tougher, but that's why you pay the guy the money that you do. Right? He's the most important position in all of sports. If anybody's able to step up and overcome that, it is a quarterback. You're expected to still go out there and have this team performing. and they just never did. And listen, if every Browns quarterback came in and absolutely stunk it up, and this offense just looked like complete garbage the whole way through, then I could have lived with it. It could have been, hey, we walk into next year, things just clearly weren't good right now in Cleveland, but you watch Jameis step up, and yes, like obviously clear issues there. The guy turns the ball over way too often. He's just out there slinging it as far as he can on most plays. But he showed the offense can move. There's still great pieces within this offense that Deshaun was just not tapping into. And that's the thing that confuses me, because when I watch the difference from what you saw in Deshaun and the difference that you saw in Jameis Winston, and we talk about the issue here being physical as well as mental, and not just the fact that, you know, he has confidence issues and everything else, but that he actually struggled to make the physical plays an NFL quarterback has to make. Just look at what Jameis was doing. It wasn't that every pass Jameis was completing was absolutely threaded through a window the size of a needle, right? He was hitting open receivers. Like, he was just hitting the guys that were wide open. Jerry Jeudy became one of the best wide receivers in the NFL, and I don't know if you guys were paying attention. Jerry was wide open on a good amount of the throws that Jameis made. Like, he had spacing. There was something available to him. It wasn't just the fact of, man, Jameis has really got it today, or Jameis really doesn't have it today. It wasn't as simple as that. Like, the offense moved no matter what, because guys were getting open at the end of the day. You just had to be able to hit the throws, which Deshaun was just not doing. And again, we can tie this back and say that part of it's mental, because I don't think he was able to read the defense as clearly as he wanted to. I don't think that he got through his progressions in the same way that Jameis was able to. But even when he did, the throws were not there. It was not quality throws being made by Deshaun Watson, the same ones that Jameis had no problem making. And I don't want to chalk this entire thing up to just, hey, he doesn't have it physically. Like, don't get away from the fact that the mental side plays a factor here. It is an impact. But to call it clear mental is just something I'm not willing to do. I'm not willing to say that Deshaun has the physical attributes to be an NFL quarterback in the state that we've seen him over the last two seasons. Because when you say that, you're telling me that Deshaun Watson is fixable. You're telling me that he can be solved, and the problems that go along with him can be solved. And I don't believe that. The experiment is over. You saw what you had with Deshaun. The experiment there has come and it has passed. Leave it there. Leave it in the past. 216-474-0092. I want to get more of you guys in on this. Again, on X, at Volnick Jake, VULINEC Jake as well. Let's go to Dominic. He's in Menor. What's going on, Dominic?
Hey, Jake. Love the show. Doing a good job, bud.
Appreciate it, man. What do you got?
So I guess what I think that other gentleman was trying to say, and not to, like, kick dead horse or whatever, but yeah. I think what that other young guy was trying to say is that the 11-game suspension, and in my opinion, again, just my opinion, and I don't approve of what Watson did, but I think the Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback, Ben, was accused of far more egregious things two times, and he had a 4-game suspension and a 6-game suspension, or if I'm not mistaken, a 3 and a 6. So the 11-game suspension, when, like, look what I said, I think that other gentleman was saying, was like it really took a whole season away. And then that took him out of the league for literally 2 years.
Right.
So not only was he going through all the problem off the field, he really wasn't on the field for almost two full seasons. And then, I mean, it just, I don't know. I think if he does anything to revive his career, it's not going to be in a Browns uniform. I think he needs a change of scenery, and nothing he'll ever do will be successful in Cleveland.
Yeah, I don't know how it could be. Like, again, as if it wasn't bad enough, like, fans booing him off as he gets injured.
Yeah.
I just don't see people turning around and being fully supportive of a Deshaun Watson-led team in any way, shape, or form. Yeah, like, a guy that needs confidence isn't getting it from that.
It was hard to listen to. It really was. You know, and it, you know, it wasn't all the fans. It was just some of them. And even though a lot of people don't agree with what he was accused of, he was still our quarterback, and there were a lot of people supporting him and wanting the best for him. But it's not that side of the people that he sees. So that's why I think he's totally checked out. You hit it on the head earlier when you said he was not into it with the interviews. He just didn't want to be here altogether.
It's felt like that the entire time. And Dominic, I appreciate the call. Since he got here, it felt like he had, and I don't want to say he wanted nothing to do with Cleveland, but in a way, like, yes, he didn't want to be here. It felt like a guy essentially collecting a check because he never felt the support. Now, I'm not going to tell you that a guy does or doesn't love football. I don't know that for a fact for Deshaun and whether or not he actually wants to be playing or whether or not he's actually just here to collect some money. But man, like some of the, he'd answer questions that were relatively like well-based questions. Like you could see where they were coming from and asking it and he would just be defensive. He'd fire back. Everything felt like a shot at him when he was in his response. It felt like he was always trying to defend himself to things that just didn't need to be defended. I remember one question in the offseason. I don't even remember what was asked, but it was a relatively like basic on-the-field football question. He turned it around to people don't believe in four, and I got to go out there and do it for myself because people don't. It sort of had this massive chip on his shoulder, and I just don't get it. Like, I get that's a part of it, but you can't be checked out. Like, that's why it'll just never work in Cleveland. It just won't. Deshaun being here won't work. For the fact of, yeah, a guy with confidence issues is not going to be backed up by a fan base who's not willing to have his back. Thomas is in Shaker. What's going on, Thomas?
Man, I could go down a whole cycle of how Browns fans. You know, by the way, when he got hurt, I was at a restaurant when he got hurt, and the whole restaurant cheered when he got hurt. So I think a lot of people were ecstatic when he got hurt. It made me sick as a Browns fan during that day. So that happened. I don't think that this whole Deshaun experiment worked at all. It was a bad marriage between us and Deshaun. I think that he still can be a good quarterback somewhere else, but I think that we need to get him out of Cleveland as soon as possible. I like Cam Ward personally. That's who I want.
I'm on the same boat there.
Do I? I think Kevin Stansky, if he had his talent, I think that it looks more and more like we're gonna have a chance to get him too. So I think that if we get Cam Ward and Kirk Cousins in here and we find a way out of Deshaun's contract next year or the year after, I think that'd be best for everybody.
Yeah, I would not have any way to disagree with you, Thomas. We're up against it, so I gotta let you go. But you know I always appreciate it. I mean, there's just no way you fix it in Cleveland. There's no way. So if the Browns are sitting here trying to sell you the fact that, yeah, there's some mental issues that he has to overcome, but aside from that, he can be a good quarterback, maybe. There were physical issues there alongside of it too, but either way, it's not getting done in Cleveland. And again, that just based off the report from Jeremy Fowler at ESPN when he was on earlier with Baskin and Phelps. Saying that that's essentially what the Browns feel from his sources and other NFL execs. I just don't know how you live with it. All right, 216-474-0092 if you have any thoughts left to get off on that. But coming up here in a few minutes, we're going to get into a certain Cavs star who somehow continues to get disrespected by the national media. It's Jake Volnick with you guys here on Overtime on 92.3 The Fan. Jake Volnick with you guys here on The Fan. Get a grip coming up at 9 o'clock and immediately following at 9:20. We'll talk to Dylan Feltovich, Ohio State Buckeyes on SI. Get the reaction to the Buckeyes' big win against Oregon and their upcoming matchup with Texas. Got a lot to cover here in a little bit of time with you guys until 11. But I mean, I got out what I wanted to say about Deshaun, and now let's go. We can go from rant to rant together. Here we go. Because I'm sitting there, I'm scrolling on X today, and I come across, of course, the news that breaks that the first round, essentially, of NBA All-Star voting, the results are released. Right? And you can look, Eastern Conference, Donovan Mitchell slots in at the 2 spot. You're like, okay, that makes some pretty good sense. It honestly maybe even a little surprising, not to us here in Cleveland, but just the reaction that you get. You're like, okay, yeah, the guy's having a good season. Nice to see him over people like Damian Lillard and Jalen Brunson and Tyrese Maxey. Like, maybe that's not what we would have pointed to. So you feel good about Donovan at the 2 spot, and then you get to the front court and you start, you know, letting your eyes wander, thinking, where is your guy? Evan Mobley slotted in as the 10 spot in the fan voting from the first fan returns. I mean, miles behind actually getting to a spot where he could be named an all-star, at least, again, in terms of where the fans are voting right now. It's so weird to me because I feel like right now, more than ever, Evans being talked about as a legitimate player in this league, a legitimate star in the NBA. Like, as he was coming up and we were waiting for him to take the leaps and waiting for him to take the strides forward, you could see sort of the doubt in the national media. You could understand it. You feel good about what he's doing on the defensive end. Probably a top two or three defensive player in all of the NBA. That's never wavered, but you knew there had to be more offensively. If he was going to be an elite player, somebody who could be named an all-star, you would need to see it on the offensive end. But now it just makes more no sense. Absolutely no sense now. Because now the offensive production is there. I mean, the guy is having by far his best season in the NBA, right? Like, the pure numbers are up. He's all the way up to almost 18.5 points per game, which eclipses the mark of just over 16 in his next highest season. The rebounds are about where they are. The assists are about where they've been. Blocks, steals, all in the same category. But instead, he's now taking 2.5 threes a game, making more than one of them, and shooting it at 43% behind the arc. Is that going to be a little bit inflated? Do I think he's going to be a 43% three-point shooter throughout the year? No, probably not. But that's what you have to work off of. The guy has completely re-innovated himself on the offensive end. I think it's clear that you can look at Evan right now and say that he's a number two option for the Cavs. We're the best team in the NBA. That has to say something. That has to be a marker there that gets you higher than 10. I don't know how you get to 10 and feel good about it. And yeah, it's great to see his name on the list. I'm going to be honest, guys. I feel like Evan Mobley this year has been a surefire, just absolute given to be an all-star. We've been having conversations about whether or not the Cavs could have three all-stars. I don't think they give you that. They don't give you three all-stars, especially not as a team in Cleveland, right? If you want three all-stars, you got to be the New York Knicks or the LA Lakers, the Boston Celtics. You have to be of those teams if you're actually going to get into the range of three. But for sure, I thought you could get two. The way that they're playing, I don't know how that's even a question. It's just somehow the guy's not getting the love from the national media. It's not just the media, the fans as well. It wouldn't even be that big of a deal if in the East I just thought the front court was absolutely loaded either. The guys that are above him just make no sense. I mean, he's behind Joel Embiid, who's missing more than half the games for the year. And even when he's on the floor, his last couple of games have been good, but it is in entirety right now. He's been terrible. He's not playing in back-to-backs. He's missing more than that, and just for rest-related issues and random pop-up injuries. And somehow you're behind him. You're behind Paolo Banchero, great player, incredible player. He's been out for weeks on weeks with an oblique injury. And he shot up way, way above Evan Mobley. I mean, to talk to you a different one, Jimmy Butler sitting in the sixth spot. And he's worse in every single aspect of the game right now. Evan Mobley is ahead of him statistically in every single category, every major category. Evan Mobley is the better player than Jimmy Butler right now. Like, I understand it's a fan vote at the end of the day, and it's always going to be sort of this pseudo-popularity contest. I get that. It's also just, if that's going to be what it is to some degree, I don't know how you get Cavs players, and Evan Mobley specifically in this case, up higher. I don't know what you can do because, again, I feel like he was a guaranteed all-star this year. I have no clue how you're able to leave that guy out of the conversation and they somehow do it without a problem. Like, how do you get recognition as a player in Cleveland? Because Donovan's gotten it, but Donovan was a star elsewhere in the league. He had made the name for himself. Evan Mobley is trying to do that actively, and clearly the exposure isn't there Because any Cavs fan can look at that and tell you how incredible Evan Mobley has been this year. And not just because you're a homer or you watch the guy night in, night out, and you don't understand what else is going on in the NBA, but because he's genuinely been incredible. He has been nothing short of elite this season, the number two option on the best team in basketball. And the guy's getting no love. None at all. I want to get you guys some of your thoughts in here, too. 216-474-0092. What's going on, Chris?
Hey, Jake. How are you tonight?
I'm doing well. What do you got?
Hey, so kind of about the All-Star thing. You kind of hit the nail on the head there. I think some of these people look at last year and make their votes, but I think you also hear about a lot of people who they admit to not watching the regular season games and don't watch to the postseason. So they're kind of voting on what they saw in the postseason last year and then, you know, whatever's popping up on their feeds. And then I think there's some guys, Jimmy Butler being a good example of somebody who kind of once they're in so long, they're like a every year they're just going to be in the All-Star game. But the main comment I wanted to make was about Evan Mobley. You know, I think he does get a lot of disrespect. And I think last year against Orlando in the postseason, I don't know what happened exactly, but there was a part of him that started getting more aggressive in the paint, kind of bodying people and realizing that he's actually a large human being. And I think that's carried over into this year. And I don't think enough people are realizing how big of a leap that has been. So I think he's definitely getting snubbed. But like you said, a lot of people like Embiid and Butler, I just think they're just going to be in every year just because those are the names. So take that for what it's worth. But, yeah, Mobley deserves more votes. He should be higher up on that list. But thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course, Chris. Appreciate you for making it, man. So then what do we do? Do we get rid of the fan vote at that point then? Because I don't think it's just fans to some degree. Like, there should never be this sort of once you're in the club, you're in when it comes to an All-Star game. I mean, you should have to produce for the year. And, of course, a large portion of that sort of you're in the club is going to come down to, well, fans think you're in it. So then they're going to give you the vote. It's just not the way it should be played out. And the fan vote in the NBA holds 50% of the power. And then they ask, I want to say it's media members hold 25% of the power, and the other 25% is held by players and execs who vote. So it is like a 50-50 split. It's not just solely up to the fans, but they carry a large portion. I always get torn on that conversation too, because you want to empower the fans to put into a game where you're trying to draw ratings, where the ratings haven't been great already, and you're trying to draw interest, so you let the fans pick who's going to be in it, pick who they're going to get to see. But at the same time, like, you're voting in Paolo Banchero right now. Good chance that guy's not even going to be able to play. I don't even know that if you vote Joel Embiid into an All-Star game, that he shows up. He probably hands that one away too. Like, Evan Mobley can climb in that aspect, but there should be no reason that he's getting disrespected other than the fact that I think Cleveland probably not getting national media coverage. You mentioned, Chris there did, the fact that you just don't really get to have these guys in front of you and you don't get to see it. People aren't watching the regular season games. A lot of people in national fans don't sit down and watch, you know, games of other teams. I don't blame you. I mean, listen, people got other things to do, but then you go through this and you're voting based on what you have seen, which would be last year's postseason, and then essentially whatever is coming up on your social media feed. And listen, if you're watching just like national media, I don't think anybody's really posting the fact that Evan Mobley is shooting a three at 43%, because most of the ones he's hitting, it's like open. Like, he's shooting open threes. He's not dicing somebody up and then hitting a step back in their mouth. It's just, he's consistently hitting open threes when given the space. Like, that's a massive step for a guy that is 7 feet tall and a defensive presence. You're just not going to see it on TikTok. I don't think a video of a guy shooting a wide open three is going to do tons of views. Nobody wants to post about that. But the leaps he has made have been exceptional. Like, he is getting ignored on the best team in the NBA. That should be value enough. The streak should have shown you, and shown everybody around the country to start paying attention to more Cavs games. Right? This team's actually doing something. They've been the biggest surprise. A ridiculous start to the season. It has been a ridiculous surprise, the Cavs in the NBA landscape, and somehow still not getting respect. If you're not going to get national respect after that, there's almost nothing you could do to get it. Nothing is going to make people pay attention to the Cavs in the regular season. And then it's just a case of, okay, so unless you have a superstar, unless you have Donovan Mitchell is the only guy up to that level right now, then that guy's just not going to get recognized and not going to be appreciated to what he is. There's no way without everything flashy behind it, which Evan Mobley is just for the most part not a flashy player. He's made some flashy plays this year, but all in all, like his play is like it's mundane from the fact of like a highlight reel. He's not putting together and one mixtapes. So you're just never going to get the recognition despite being, I mean, one of the best forwards in basketball this year. He's easily one of the best big men in the entire league right now. It is a blatant exclusion. It's a crime to have that guy sitting there all the way at the bottom of the list. And if he misses an all-star game, you just have no explanation for it. You're playing an all-star game without one of the best players in the league, up and coming and taking a massive leap this year from where he was last year. I just don't know how you get there. 216-474-0092. If you guys want to jump in as well, on X, at Volnick Jake, VLINEC Jake. Get a grip. 9 o'clock. Jake Volnick right here with you guys on The Fan.